Iconoclastic. Okay.
Use your big boy words, Barry.
Yeah. So, Kyle, I saw recently over at General Reformation that your iconoclastic tendencies came out.
I can't do it.
So, oh, are you going to? So bad. Do I have to say more?
No. It's just because we could tell you were on the verge of laughing. You barely held it together. Oh, man.
All right. From now on, I'm saying iconoclastic like a boss.
Like a boss. Written something that's caused a bit of a stir, and I'm gonna be perfectly honest here. I, on this particular issue of images of Christ, I'm kind of undecided. So I'm really curious to pick your brain on this, but I'm getting ahead of myself. But you wrote something, and it was on a movie. And what movie did you write on?
The specific reference was the new movie Risen.
Yeah. Now, from what I could see from the comments, people were fired up about two things. One, that you were commenting on the movie without having seen the movie. And the other one is that you were critiquing the very fact that they showed Christ in the movie. So let's skip the first one, right? You answered that one. If people are interested, they can go read the comments. But I'm more curious about this whole idea of images and whatnot. So if just here, just for the sake of the audience, what did you basically say? What was the general thrust of your point?
So, it wasn't so much a movie review, I guess. Mm-hmm. It was more of, and I wouldn't even say the majority of the article was trying to persuade people not to see the movie. Yeah, it was more as Christians, how should we be thinking through this? What might be some cautions that we need to have? But like you said, my third point was probably the most forceful as far as more of a black and white issue for me. And it did have to do with images of Christ. And so the movie depicts Christ both on the cross and in his resurrected state. And again, I haven't seen the movie. That's what I've been told. Right. Actually, I think one of the previews demonstrated that. I think there was a preview where it showed Christ on the cross.
Yeah, actually, I did. I actually saw that. Yeah, just not too long ago. Like, yeah, it was just on TV. Just okay. Like, oh, there it is. Hello.
And so one of the concerns that I raised about a movie like this, and this would apply to other movies as well, some of these faith-based movies, mm-hmm. you know, what was it, 11, 12 years ago now, The Passion of the Christ mm-hmm. Came out, yep. Which was one long, prolonged movie of Christ Passion Week. Mm-hmm. In a couple of weeks, there's a new movie being released called the Young Messiah.
There is? I haven't even heard of it.
Yeah, wow. So that one will be filling in gaps from the Gospels and just and what was kind of a speculative piece on what was Jesus' childhood like.
And is this one like a major Hollywood production, kind of like Risen, or is it some second tier?
You know, I don't remember. Barry, is it for movie theaters or is it a TV special?
I thought it was movie, but I don't know for sure.
That's what I thought as well.
So. Well, either way, so they're delving into the boyhood of Christ.
Yeah. So I guess the issue that I raised, and I understand that with my evangelical brothers and sisters, I gained very few points on this because it's an issue that seems so peripheral to so many people, but has really been very foundational to a Presbyterian system of doctrine. And that has to do with whether or not pictures of Jesus are appropriate. And, you know, I guess the way that I come at it is largely being informed by the second commandment in mm-hmm. Exodus chapter 20, verses 4 and 5, where I think one of the things that is being commanded there or forbidden in the second commandment is to worship God through the medium of images, that we are not to make a likeness to him, a graven image of him based on anything in creation, and worship that image. And so the question that I really wanted to probe or at least bring to the forefront of people's minds is a picture of Jesus a medium whereby we worship him? And if it is that not forbidden by the second commandment? And so that was just the caution that I threw out, is we need to think through this. I think, you know, people want to give knee-jerk reactions and
right.
to their, well, some people did. But I guess I just want to encourage people to pause, and that while that sounds so foreign to so many of our ears, and it certainly was to me, I didn't grow up with, you know, I was 25 years old, I think, before I first even heard something like that. Mm-hmm. But it is a position within certain strains of Protestantism that has historically really been held to. And we need to think through, I think, the biblical arguments that are often used against images of Jesus and take that seriously. Because if images of Christ are forbidden and become a medium of worshiping him, then to see these movies, I think, implies a degree of sinfulness. I think it's wrong to see those. So
okay. Yeah. So, okay. I, like I said, I have some questions. I'd like to work through it, not in a debatey kind of way, but in a genuine, I've thought about this. It's been a while since I've thought about it. But, you know, your post kind of reignited in my mind, like, yeah, you know what, I probably ought to like come to a firm conclusion on this. But just to put our cards on the table, so I'm still just kind of undecided. Where do you land on this, Barry?
I'm gonna wait. I want to hear Kyle give his full iconoclastic blast to you. So I'm just gonna wait to see what he says.
Oh. Okay. So you're gonna be you're just gonna be a bystander.
Barry said that like a boss. I'm yeah, really impressed.
But here's the thing: is I actually do know where Barry stands, because if I recall correctly, you gave us a pretty strong sermon on the Passion, right?
Yes.
A while back in the day, yeah.
Austin, you're getting ahead of your... Barry's trying to build up the suspense and the drama.
I'm not letting him have the suspense.
Or stealing away.
So cards on the table. Would both of you then say that any depictions of Christ, I mean, because, okay, let me back up. I think all of us would here agree that we shouldn't have any depictions of the Holy Spirit or God the Father, right? And we're agreed on that.
Perfect.
But, yeah.
You've conceded a lot.
I have. But what,
what about a dove?
Is there any medium? Well, yeah. You're getting ahead of yourself. So, but would there be any, like a dove or anything like that? Is there any place for any of that in your guys' minds? I guess, because I genuinely don't know what you think.
Well, can we skip the dove for right now?
Yeah, sure. Okay. Skip the dove. Let's just stick with Christ.
So, going back to pictures of Jesus, I don't think there is a place at all for those things, and I think that images of Christ are inherently sinful.
Okay, all right, you agree, Barry?
Yeah,
yeah.
I think any depiction of Christ is going to come up short or suggest too much, and it's going to lead to, you know, there are greater forms and lesser forms of idolatry, but in the end, it's still to me a form of idolatry.
So,
you know, there are a number of ways that people approach that and reasons why, you know, there are, of course, people who say, well, You know, we don't really have a true physical description of Christ. I remember Leonard Ravenhill once, and I don't know where he would have stood on this position, but I remember he was preaching on Revelation 1 once and said that he just couldn't stand pictures of Christ, because if you want to know what Christ looks like now, Revelation 1 gives it to us, but it does it in such metaphors, right? What do feet that burn like bronze, what does that even begin to... It's not even so much a physical description. So there are those who will argue, you know, we don't even know what Christ looked like, so that type of speculation is unhelpful. There are those who argue because Christ is fully God and fully man, and a picture can really only convey the humanity of Christ, that at the end of the day it falls short of portraying a whole Christ. So those are some of the arguments. I guess the one that I find most persuasive was given by John Murray in an article that he wrote on images of Jesus. And where I think he really sealed the deal for me, or really very practically put it, is that any thoughts, any impressions that we might have of Jesus Christ ought to be worshipful. That if they fall short of a worshipful response, then we're actually breaking the third commandment, which is to revere the name of God. And so Murray kind of hypothetically says, so if we allow that images of Jesus are appropriate and they're okay, then the only response that we can give to those images, the only appropriate response, is worship. That if we allow for pictures of Jesus, we should be worshiping Jesus through that picture. But then Murray comes in and says, but the worshiping of God through these images is contrary to the second commandment, and therefore we shouldn't have images of Christ.
Okay. Yeah. All right. I mean, that's in terms of a valid argument. I mean, it's certainly a cogent, valid argument. So I'm just kind of curious. I want to come back to that, because some of the people in your post kind of was pressing on that point. You had raised that, and I have a couple questions about it. But so when you guys look at the second commandment, do you think it is denying in any sense making images like art? I mean, so our listeners, is there any sense in which just art in general is prohibited in that commandment?
No.
Okay, so we're not Muslims here, right?
Right.
Some direction they've gone. So the problem is the worshiping, right? This using it, some kind of image as a medium of worshiping God, right? That's the real problem.
Well, I mean, you have to be careful, because if you start painting pictures of Christ or pictures of God, you're still, to me, going to be misrepresenting who he is. You can't capture him. He's too glorious,
okay,
too beyond our understanding. So I would not be comfortable encouraging an artist to paint pictures of Jesus and biblical scenes or that type of thing. I know that sounds extreme to people, because there's some...
Oh, wait. Was that your question, Austin, when you said forbidding? I just thought, were you saying art in general, or were you...
Was just saying art in general. But yeah, I take that point, Barry. I'm just so curious to follow up on that. If theoretically a person took a picture of Christ and someone were to look at that picture after the fact, would that be sinful? Since it would be an accurate, it's still a two-dimensional image. So, I mean, no pictures are ever entirely. I mean, it's not three-dimensional. It could be black and white, et cetera, et cetera. So I guess in that sense, it's not perfectly accurate, but it would certainly be a fair representation.
Do you mean if someone had the ability to take a picture of Jesus when he was on Earth? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, because you were... because you were saying the problem. One of the problems is it's an inaccurate representation. So,
yeah, I believe that's why God. I believe that's why the Lord purposely sent Jesus at a time in history when that wasn't possible. Because the idolatry now is great. I can't imagine what it would have been like if people were working with real images and things like that. I just think that God, in his perfect timing and his sovereignty, sent the Lord to the earth at a time where his image couldn't be captured. And because he wants us to believe by faith in hearing the gospel and hearing the word preached, not in visuality.
Yeah. So, okay. So can I press back a little bit? And like I said, these are things that if in my mind, if these could be answered with complete satisfaction, it would kind of seal the deal for me. But I don't know that I've ever heard them answered in complete satisfaction. But so, yeah, there you go, right? One of the things I think, though, is, and you kind of raised this, Kyle, is you have Revelation 1 where you do have, like, you know, white hair. You know, you have this Daniel 7 where it's depicting, the Ancient of Days. And then you just have word pictures, narrative, any good teacher, preacher who communicates the Gospels well. I can't help but when I hear or read these things, I get an image like the demoniac falling at the feet of Christ. When that's read to me, it's like I see it in my mind. So is that image in my mind wrong? I mean, let me say it wrong, like, because obviously it's inaccurate, right? It's not an accurate picture of what actually was, but is it morally wrong?
Yeah, I think it is. To be faithful to the catechism, the larger catechism talks not only about physical representations of Christ, but even mental images of him. And I think, people like you and I, Austin, and Barry, in today's generation, have been done no fair service by the amount of pictures that there are of Christ. You know, mm-hmm. Growing up in church and growing up reading books and story Bibles, I mean, these things automatically, I too struggle with that. You know, I still have the image of the flowing haired Jesus with the purple sash. And I'm not just trying to blame the culture around me, but if the church would rise up and be faithful to this, and if we would not permit such an abundance of images of Christ, I think it would, in some ways, if I can say this, I think it would begin to psychologically change us that when we read those passages, when we think about them, we're not being immediately led to these images. You know, even Revelation, I mean, whatever physical description you get in Revelation, again, is so filled with metaphors. You know, yes, you have that the hairs of his head were white like wool, but you have, eyes are like flame of fire, feet like burnished bronze. I can't even, and I count myself as a pretty imaginative person, I can't even figure out what feet like burnished bronze actually looks like.
Of metaphors is not to put the thing you're describing into that picture. If one of you said, I'm as bald as a billiard ball, you're not supposed to picture me, with a cue ball on the top of my head. You're just giving a metaphor. Well, the same thing with these metaphors of God in the Bible. You're not supposed to picture God that way in terms of actually creating an image that you're seeing as God that has, whether it's the burnished feet or if it says he has wings like an eagle, you're not supposed to picture him with those things. It's just describing him in a way that we can relate to. So that's the problem with, idolatry is it starts in the heart. It starts in that's what the confession warns against, is our imaginations leading us to picture God in ways that we want to picture him.
Go ahead, Austin.
Well, I was just going to say, I see that point, but it seems like there's a disconnect in my mind when the Bible isn't, on the one hand, afraid to give word pictures or metaphorical images that inevitably will create a certain image in your mind. I mean, when you read about the transfiguration and he suddenly shines, I mean, I can't imagine that it would be wrong, since it's it's describing it, and so you inevitably in your mind at least have some kind of image. So it seems very strange to me that that would be intrinsically sinful at that level. So in my mind, the direction I go is, okay, the second commandment says not to worship, you know, not to create these images and worship them. But at the same token, I can't imagine that that is disavowing seeing things in your mind from a narrative. It doesn't seem like that is in the same caliber, given the very nature of the case.
So Austin, would you say that the mental images that you have of Christ evokes worship from you?
Or just veneration?
No, I guess not.
Which is the, you know, the orthodox way of getting around this, is that they don't worship, they just venerate.
Right, but then let me challenge you the way Murray challenges his readers in that article. Then are you not having unworthy thoughts of Christ?
Well, see, and I guess, you know what? I don't know that that's the horns of the dilemma for me. I don't know that it's either worship or unworthy thoughts. For example, I mean, there's all kinds of times when I'm, maybe, let's say I'm listening to some false teacher talk about Christ, and I'm just hearing it on an academic level, or I'm reading a book that has Jesus' name. I'm not, at that moment, I'm registering the idea, but I'm not worshiping. You know, when I come at these things, do I imagine them in my mind in a way that would be irreverent or gross? You know, no.
Well, define irreverence, though. I mean, if you're not esteeming Christ to be what he is worthy to be esteemed as, is that not irreverence?
Well, no, I don't. No, it doesn't. I guess it doesn't. It doesn't strike me that way. No, I guess that's.
What is irreverence? If you were to give a definition to that,
well, in terms of with Christ, if I'm, yeah, obviously, if I'm not thinking of him in some kind of like almost pedestrian kind of way, you know, thinking about him in a way that would be contrary to his glory and all that kind of stuff, right? And so you're going to say, oh, but see, you're not imagining him correctly, so therefore it's falling short of the glory due him.
I guess no. What I would say is he is worthy of worship, right?
Oh, yeah,
Revelation
sure.
4 and 5, he is mm-hmm. worthy of worship. Mm-hmm. And so any thoughts that we entertain, any impressions that we have of Christ that is less than worship, I think is thinking of him in a lesser degree than his glory demands.
Yeah, I just don't know that.
And I think in some ways, you know, as I've wrestled with this, as I've thought through it, I think when you set it in that type of context, it really does show me my inability to truly keep the second commandment. You know, it would be very easy if you said, well, I grew up, for instance, in a home and in a church that the second commandment simply meant making a little statue and prostrating yourself before that statue. And as long as you don't do that, you've not broken the second commandment. And I know it sounds arrogant because it is. I grew up thinking I've never broken the second commandment. But even this begins to show me that I cannot keep the second commandment. That even this is beyond me. I have sinned 1,000 times in this. And it's not an easily attainable thing to obey, if that makes sense.
I guess my way of tilting the other direction is that, you know, when it talks about plucking out his beard or slapping him in the face or pressing a crown of thorns into his head, these are indicators to me that it is not intrinsically wrong. God didn't fashion language in the way our minds work that it would be so readily and so inevitably sinful. You see what I'm saying? In the same way that, yeah, he is fine describing himself with wool like hair and robes that come down and a dove or whatever.
So can I push you on consistency?
Sure.
How then would it be wrong to picture God the Father, who's also who is described in those terms in Scripture?
Well, you know what? In my mind, the difference is that God the Father is, I don't understand spirit. And, you know, and so when Exodus says, you saw no form. Yeah, that's right. I saw no form. The difference with Christ is that he did incarnate and he is the image of the invisible God. You know, as strange as that is to even say. And he was in the form of a man. And so...
But right there, you would admit, though, that the biblical language itself doesn't give warrant, right?
What do you mean?
Your argument is more contingent than just the biblical language of a head and of hands and of a cheek having a beard plucked out. I guess you're resting your argument on that, but your argument actually has to be more than that, because God the Father is sometimes described in anthropomorphic terms of having hands and feet. So
when I think when it does that, sure, like a dove, right? Like, sure, yeah, I picture a dove, yeah, coming down and resting on somebody, right? I mean, when it rests on somebody, it rests on somebody, and I know that whatever that image in my mind is not accurate. In the same way, this is a tangent, but when you listen to podcasts, I inevitably get some kind of conception of what the people talking sound like, and I'm always shocked and surprised when I actually see their pictures.
You mean so look I'm like, well what they look that, like.
You know, on the one hand, oh, what I say.
You said sound like. You meant look like.
Oh, sound like, yeah, what they look like, yeah. So I know it's inaccurate in that sense. I just don't think, I think there's a difference. I guess in my mind, I do can parcel out that there is, I'm not coming at these images as like something I'm worshiping. It's merely just an imagination at play. I still think
if you're not worshiping, then you are, I don't know how you get around that you're not, if you're not worshiping, how are you not entertaining less thoughts of Jesus than he deserves?
We're talking about, you just said Jesus right there. And I mean, I would ask, I mean, are you worshiping? I mean, I don't know. It seems a little bit of a stretch to me. I mean, all things should be done to the glory of God. And when I use his name, I use it respectfully and stuff like that. But I don't know that when I'm just having a conversation like this, I'm worshiping, as it were.
Do you think the disciples who had a mental image of Christ after he left, do you think they ever thought upon that image and that impression of Christ with anything less than doxological worship? Do you think it was possible for them to associate that image of Christ with their knowledge of him and not in one sense just be filled with worship?
I mean, maybe that's supposed to catch me, but maybe I don't sound pietistic enough, but yeah, I think so, sure. Just in the same way that, and maybe you would say, well, then they were sinning. I guess I don't put everything on quite the same plane when it comes to worship. In the same way that when I'm interacting with my parents, I there are different degrees of honor too, and like with my wife, with love, and it does depend on the kind of the setting. So, but yeah, I get your point. It just seems, I don't know, it just doesn't, for whatever reason in my own mind and heart, it doesn't seem to seal the deal. Because I do think that when they thought of Christ after the fact, they did, like, they could picture in their minds Christ. They could do that, and in some sense, it was probably even inaccurate because our memories aren't perfect and Christ changed over time and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So
in glory, when we see him face to face, will you have less than worshipful thoughts of him?
Well, no.
Oh, okay,
okay. Yeah.
But it's okay now to have less than worshipful thoughts. Sorry.
Well, and I guess what I would say here, and I mean this in all seriousness, is that the way you've constructed it with the worshipful thing, because what I would normally do with the second commandment is break it into, yeah, we're not to worship, but there are times when you can have perhaps educational or artistic purposes. In other words, if a person could picture these things in their mind, admittedly not accurate, then what is the jump from going from mind to paper? I don't see a huge jump there. Maybe there is on some levels, but...
One of the places.
So anyway.
Oh, sorry.
Well, hold on. Let me. Yeah, let me just finish real quick. So when you construct this worship argument, basically all of our thoughts should be worship. When you think of Christ, it ought to be worshipful, and so you shouldn't have an image. Okay, what it strikes me as, if I'm just to be brutally honest, is it seems like a good strategic move in terms of an argument, but I'm not sure it actually carries the biblical force behind it. That's my suspicion. I mean, I'm not saying it's wrong. That's just my suspicion.
One of the
Barry, what were you going to say?
Oh yeah, one of the places where I think there's clarity on this. In J.I. Packer's book, Knowing God, in chapter 4, he discusses this issue and he quotes Calvin. Just a short quote from Calvin here. A true image of God is not to be found in all the world, and hence his glory is defiled and his truth corrupted by the lie whenever he is set before our eyes in a visible form. Therefore, to devise any image of God is itself impious, because by this corruption his majesty is adulterated and he is figured to be other than he is. And I guess and as Packer goes on and develops his argument, it's just that an image can't capture the fullness of the one that it's seeking to portray. And to me, that's the bottom line, is if I've never seen you, Austin, and I try to draw a picture of you, I'm not going to do a very good job. I mean, you could describe yourself to me and I could do my best.
Right.
And I'm not going to do,
sure.
I mean, that's like the
sure.
criminal detectives trying to, you know, do a composite sketch of a guy who's robbed a bank or something. If you ever see those and then you see the real person, sometimes it's fairly close, but still not perfect. And you think about how much more the Almighty, we're missing so much. And one of the things that Packer does is he discusses how God has revealed himself. And he talks about how he revealed himself at Mount Sinai. And, you know, because there's a place where God is purposely veiling himself with clouds and lightning and thunder. He's not revealing himself to the people fully. And he's commanding them, giving them the Ten Commandments, telling them not to create an image. Of course, then you have Aaron down below making a golden calf, which wasn't his portrayal of another God. It was a portrayal of, as he says to the people, the God who brought us out of Egypt. And we can say, well, sure, I mean, that's a bull and that's not even close to God, but there were reasons that he created that bull, beliefs and even a sense of honoring him, why he made it out of gold instead of wood. All those kinds of things came into his thinking as he was doing this. And in the same way, we can think we're honoring Jesus by trying to make pictures of him, to teach about him, all these other things. But if that was what he wanted us to do, why was he given to us as the word, the Logos? And why are we told to preach him? And that faith comes through hearing, not by sight. Even in his book,
If I can add to that, to see him represented in the sacraments too, which I think,
sure,
right, that's,
yeah,
those are the physical signs God has given us,
mm-hmm,
to lift our,
right,
thoughts worshipfully to Jesus.
But, yeah.
Sorry, Barry,
right,
I interrupted you.
Yeah.
No, that's okay. I'm still having a little trouble with your voices cutting out, so there was a time where I might be interrupting. I'm not meaning to do that. I think it's the connection we have. So even Neil Postman in his book about entertainment, he compares ancient Israel to the other nations of the earth, and he talks about how all the other nations were visual cultures, and God really called Israel to be a culture of the ear, of hearing the word of God and speaking the truth to one another. That didn't mean that there wasn't any visuality. Of course, you had some of that in the temple and the tabernacle, but primarily it was a oral communication that God was fostering and veiling himself from being portrayed by image.
Yeah. And those resonate with me in particular, that God hasn't been really interested in painting pictures for us. He gave us, two sacraments, and we are to be people who preach the word, and faith comes by hearing. And also the fact that, you know, Christ is gone and we walk by faith and not by sight. All those, absolutely, those I think resonate with me. And I think in that sense, maybe just to wrap up, I see the point and I see the argument. It's the mental thing that I particularly still trip over. I think there's a lot of wisdom in not doing this kind of stuff, but man, when I read Revelation 1, where you cannot read that without picturing something, metaphor or not. That would be the very point, though, that we're saying is, oh, that's right. It is an inaccurate representation that text is calling us to picture in our minds. That is the very point of a metaphor. So I just, that's the point that I still struggle with. 3GT is a podcast designed not only for your edification, but your enjoyment as well. Feel free to share ideas or input. We'd love to hear from you. Check out our website over at 3GT.fm for contact information, or simply write us at threeguystheologizing@gmail.com. Check us out on Facebook as well. Likes are always nice. We welcome those. And if you're feeling particularly warm-hearted, write us a review over at iTunes. Thanks again for hanging out with us. Hope you enjoyed. Until next time.